Sometimes when we face massive challenges, we can easily fall into feeling overwhelmed. Like there's so much to do or take on that we can't imagine having the capacity or endurance for it. Sitting with that can make us question, how do I keep leading or showing up when the uncertainty just doesn't end? Well, my guest today is someone who has spent decades helping leaders move from white-knuckling survival to something more sustainable. And she's going to teach us about the power of micro-adjustments that can make a difference in how we approach these experiences. We're in season 9. Season 9 is focused on strengthening workplace culture. You might not make this connection, but part of strengthening culture is strengthening our resiliency mindset. And I think we're going to get into that as well. So let me introduce our guest. Julie Fisher is a transformation coach, well-being consultant, and host of 9 to Thrive, the well-being podcast, which I had the fortune of being on as well. With over 25 years of corporate and nonprofit experience in sales, marketing, and fundraising, who now helps individuals, teams, and organizations move from survival to sustainable thriving through evidence-based tools rooted in applied positive psychology. And she is a certified professional certified coach, as well as in applied positive psychology through the Flourishing Center. So welcome to the show, Julie.
Thank you, Mira. I'm so excited to be here. And I like any show that starts with music.
Especially good music, right?
Especially good music that you can actually move your body to. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. Now, Julie, you went from over 25 years in sales and marketing and fundraising, right? And you went from that to focusing on well-being. And it happened after a family crisis. And I'm wondering if you're willing to share just a little bit about what happened to that experience that led you to rethink and redo your work.
I say it was one of those experiences that perhaps I maybe wished didn't happen, and it has transformed my life for the better in every way. I was tootling along in life, and my daughter was 21 and she was a junior in college, and she went into recovery for drug and alcohol addiction. And all of a sudden, I was, I think, invited in a very real way to look at my own family of origin. I was the daughter of an alcoholic, and I had, for the first time, knew what the word codependency meant. And I realized all of these patterns that I had from my childhood that I had brought into my own family of origin. And it felt, when I think back on it, it felt like my daughter was going to be doing some really, really hard work. And it felt like the invitation for me to walk with her was one that I just couldn't say no to. And so it sent me on a journey, family therapy and individual therapy and AA and Al-Anon. And in that, I met a coach. And I was doing some work with him. It was a little different work than I was doing in therapy. And one day he said to me, I'm doing this training, actually coach's training. Would you ever want to, you know, come to this? And I was like, oh, sure, I'll come just for personal growth, not because I wanted to actually do this work. And it was a group training. And after the training, he said to me, this feels very intuitive for you. Mm. It feels like you intuitively connect with people, and have you and would you ever consider this? And it piqued my interest. And what I would say, Mira, is the through line of all of my work has always been around connecting with people. Mm-hmm. And so this was yet just a deeper, more meaningful way for me to perhaps do that in a time that felt perfect.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. You know, when you think about sales, marketing, fundraising, that is absolutely connecting with people. And then what an unbelievable, incredible journey. And from the impact of like your own experience with your daughter, and then meeting surreptitiously almost, you know, the coach who noticed something that you didn't notice in yourself to lead you to this. Incredible. So now you indicate you're on a mission to address what you call the unwell-being crisis, which I just love. I automatically resonate with that term. And, you know, just thinking about like your own journey, that makes perfect sense. Tell me more about what is the unwell-being crisis that we're facing right now?
Okay. I want to think about this in four, maybe five different areas. First of all, I want to say that when I'm talking about well-being, I'm talking about mental well-being, emotional well-being, spiritual well-being, and physical well-being. And the overlay of that is there's a basic assumption that within that, in order to remotely achieve any well-being, we have to have met Maslow's basic hierarchy of needs. And so there's a financial piece to this, right? Mm-hmm. So first of all, we have a lot of people struggling. And we could touch in different areas on, you know, what's happening in terms of, you know, medical benefits, mental health care, you know, care benefits. So we have a whole group that is not meeting the basic needs, right? So that contributes to an unwell-being crisis. If you think about mental health, the last Pew Research study where they asked Americans about mental health, where they thought we were, 92% said they believed that we were in a mental health crisis. Mira, wow. Our country doesn't agree on anything.
Yeah, I know. That's incredible.
Right. That number is incredible. It really, yeah. Really is incredible. And I don't think probably anybody who's listening today doesn't see those signs of all the ways we're seeing declining mental health in our country. So that's one piece. Yeah. The second piece is emotional health and emotional dysregulation. And again, I think we see emotional dysregulation on the news every night.
Yeah.
And we see it, Mira, in the crisis of school shootings and mass shootings. All of that is emotional dysregulation. I actually am going to give you a personal example. I live in a townhouse complex, and our board put forth in a very short timeline a very large assessment. And we've had two meetings now. And again, the discourse of lack of emotional regulation and the way people respond, the way we see people respond on social media. So we're at this point where I think our amygdala, that threat response, is activated all the time.
Yeah.
You know, we're not meant to scroll a phone all day or look at a computer all day. So we're in a crisis for emotional regulation. Physical health, I'm just going to touch on really briefly. We're in the top five in terms of economics, in terms of in the world, and we're 55th for health outcomes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then there's the spiritual component, which spiritual is different than religious. However, religion does fit into that spiritual component. And as we all know and read about, church attendance is down, or get people are not joining organized religions, especially younger people. And spirituality is around meaning and purpose. And I think a lot of people are struggling with that. Like, we want to matter. And I think there's a huge question out there in this sort of divisive nature that we're living in is, you know, how do I matter and how do I make meaning out of my life? So I'm saying, I think we're at a D.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I would add to the spirituality also, you know, this, you know, moral injury that we're sort of talking about, the sort of feeling of it's not, moral injury is not necessarily always related to trauma or trauma response or anything like that, but right. Rather like, am I doing the right things for the right reason? Or is this like where I am right now and what I'm asked to be doing morally corrupt, and it feels so wrong and it feels so disconnected and so misaligned that I've lost myself in it, you know? And right. That can feel like that kind of loss of connection to meaning and purpose as well.
Yes. And I think you're also speaking to that connection to something greater, even if it's organizationally, right? Am I aligned with what we're doing? Mm-hmm. You know, when we go in and talk to organizations about purpose, right? What's your why? Why are you here? And when you get out of alignment with that, right, you are wondering, how do I fit in here?
Yeah.
In terms of the puzzle.
Yeah. I love how you, I mean, a lot of people talk about the wheel of life, which is what you basically described, but I have rarely heard anybody go into the trends that we see nationally and globally and how that's impacting your own individual wheel of life, right? Like we're all in this together. We're all experiencing, you know, some trends. And so even when you're thinking about your own kind of experiences with the physical, the emotional, the psychological, spiritual, it's in context. It's in the context of what's happening around us in our world and the impact that it has on us. It's not just like us having to somehow recalibrate something in a vacuum, right?
Right, right, right. We're living, right, we're not living in isolation. And so it's so interesting when I'm talking to clients, so often we're talking about, you know, sort of this global context, right, that we're sort of sharing, although each of us are experiencing it differently depending on all of our life experiences. And then we have our own individual things.
Right.
Our workplaces, our families, our relationships, our sick relative, our all those things. And so it feels like, and what I just named were sort of systemic things, that doesn't remotely take into account what is happening for all of us personally and professionally.
That's right. That's right. I'm curious, as you're thinking about those pillars you just described, one might think, oh my gosh, 92% of people agree that we're in a mental health crisis, or some might attend to, oh my gosh, we're like 55th in the world when it comes to healthcare. Are there any of these that you think are the greatest crisis that we need to attend to more than another one? Or like, how do you think about prioritizing?
Such a great question, Mira. I think for our young people, if you've read Jonathan Haidt's The Anxious Generation, like I think for young people, I think the mental health crisis, I think I'm going to put mental and emotional health together.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Because they are so intertwined. I think for our children's sake, I think we really, really need to be addressing their mental and emotional health and really thinking about, you know, they have grown up in a technological world that is in some ways meant to make them anxious. I mean, that's what an algorithm, all of those things, given the context that we weren't meant to look at a screen, we weren't meant to be activated all day long. You know, our brain needs rest. Yeah. And in this 24/7, you know, they've grown up only with text communication. Okay. You and I grew up and there was a phone in the kitchen and people called the home phone. And if you weren't home, I grew up, you're younger than I am. I grew up, there was no answering machine. If you weren't home, nobody wondered, oh, is she out with somebody else? Did they go to the movies without me? They were thinking, oh, your family must be gone. You're out for the afternoon. And so when you think about just nervous system regulation and the things that stress us out and make us anxious and activate us, our brains just weren't, and our nervous systems, our bodies, I don't think were meant, you know, rest and digest is real. And I'm guessing, I'm curious, I'm going to look this up. I'm guessing we as a generation, we're doing much less resting and digesting than the generation before us.
Yeah, that's a very good hypothesis. Yeah, absolutely. I want to get into micro adjustments, but we are nearing a brief ad break. So you're listening to The Hard Skills with me, Dr. Mira Brunku, and our guest today, Julie Fisher. The Hard Skills is sponsored by Towerscope, my leadership and team development consulting firm. You can learn more about it at gotowerscope.com. The Hard Skills show live streams on Tuesdays at 5 p.m. Eastern time on LinkedIn, YouTube, Twitter, Twitch, through talkradio.nyc. So if you're here right now on a Tuesday, 5 p.m., and you have questions or you want to interact with us, you can leave us a message in any of those areas and we will respond to you real time. Otherwise, we will be right back with our guest in just a moment.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a high-achieving, growth-oriented leader? Are you interested in developing your authentic leadership while creating a healthy, inclusive workplace? Hi, I'm Dr. Mira Brunku, host of The Hard Skills on talkradio.nyc at 5 p.m. Eastern on Tuesdays, where we discuss how leaders develop the hard skills needed to make a greater impact. We interview experts, have live coaching, and tackle these challenges. Listen to The Hard Skills on Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Welcome back to The Hard Skills with me, Dr. Mira Brunku, and our guest today, Julie Fisher. And Julie, before we get to micro adjustments and what they are, I'd love for you to explain to those who might not be familiar with positive psychology what that is, because positive psychology is behind a lot of your work. And I think it's such a important but maybe lesser known area. So what is positive psychology? And you're on mute.
There I am. I'm back again. Thank you. Okay. So positive psychology in the broadest sense is really the study of human flourishing. So what does it mean to flourish in this complex world we're living in? Why I think a lot of people haven't heard about this is it's a relatively new science. It was discovered, uncovered, named in the 1990s by Dr. Martin Seligman, who was at UPenn and at the time was the president of the American Psychological Association. And he's a psychologist and a professor. And he was doing a lot of research. And here was the question he was, I think, asking. We're wired to focus on what's wrong with us. Traditional psychology has pretty much focused on pathology. And what I mean by that is you don't hear a lot of people saying, I am feeling so great, I'm going to go to a therapist. You hear people saying, yeah, I'm struggling in this area, or I'm feeling anxious, or I'm feeling stressed. So when I say pathology, that sounds like a big word, but that's what I mean. It means people go because they're trying to, I would say, quote unquote, fix something that's wrong, right? Or examine something. And he wanted to ask the different question, what would happen if we started looking at what was right with us? Which really means hacking what we're wired to do, which is we have this overactive threat response, which has kept us alive, thank God, for all these years. And it gives us this negativity bias, which is always looking for threats out there. And so it's not the most natural thing for us to do. So positive psychology was basically saying, we're going to start looking at what's right with us. And it begins with looking at things like our strengths. It begins by looking at mindset. So engagement, flow, what are the things that actually make us engage more with life? What are the things that help us achieve our goals? What are the things that keep us hopeful, right? Hope theory and change theory. So it really was, I think, taking psychology to the next level.
Yeah. And I think for listeners who are maybe even more kind of aware of different psychological fields, right? Clinical psychology is about the interventions for mental health conditions. It's about diagnosing mental health conditions and what interventions work. Positive psychology is much more what you think about when you think about counseling, vocational counseling, coaching. The entire coaching field is based in counseling and positive psychology, right?
Exactly.
It is all about if you are not, struggling with mental health conditions, but instead you are challenged by just navigating the day-to-day world, right? And you're going from, complexity to wanting to navigate with flourishing, as Julie said, these are the areas. And what's fascinating to me is that Martin Seligman, for those of you who are familiar, started out as a researcher in learned helplessness, what we can't do when we're stuck, right? And for him to just get to this place in his career to say, you know what, I'm finished working on that. I'm really interested, but what if you could do something? What if you had the capability? What would that be? And that's the flourishing part, right?
Yes. And I think what's interesting is I forgot that he studied learned helplessness. And what's interesting about that is a lot of what applied positive psychology is, right? Because there's a science of and applied positive psychology is about the tools, the strategies, the interventions. And what most of those are individuals using their agency. So that's part also of what it's this forward movement, right? Which again, lends itself to coaching, right? It's like, you're here and you want to get here. And what are the things we need to do to get there? And I think that's part of it. It's, and the other thing that's interesting about it, another Chris Peterson, who was also one of the founders of positive psychology, he termed it north of neutral, right? So that idea of We're just here, right? Everything's, you know, like when you say to someone, how are you? Fine. You know, fine. Like I would say fine is neutral. But mm-hmm. how do we get north of neutral, right? Yeah. Like what's that next level where I'm happier? I am engaged. I get have flow experiences. I have goals. So I think it's that meaning and purpose. I know what impact I want to make in the world. Yes.
Yeah. So now let's talk about one of the many tools that you have in your toolbox when it comes to positive psychology, micro adjustments. What are they?
In the simplest terms, they're small changes. And I think as a coach, right, in the simplest of terms, people come to coaching because they're here. If you're watching, I'm one place and they want to get here, right? They want to get to another place. And I think most people come to a coach because they want to do that, right? And yet they haven't been able to do it on their own. And part of the reason I think is sometimes the distance from where they are to where they want to be is large. Mm-hmm. And so the feeling that I need to make huge changes, mm-hmm. right? So if someone is saying, like, I don't care for my health outcomes, for I'm going to use this just as an example. But the distance between where they are and where they want to be is so large. I would say the way to get there would be a number of micro adjustments. Mm-hmm. Some are probably going to be around mindset. Some are going to be around building muscles, right? Strengths that they don't have, that they haven't had thus far, or they haven't worked thus far. And then incorporating those, you know, I say micro adjustments can start with 1 minute. You know, the first micro adjustment in the most stressful situation would be 3 deep breaths. Can I simply calm my nervous system? One of the things I focus on in these micro adjustments is, are you familiar with Barbara Fredrickson's work?
No.
Okay. She's a pioneer in positive psychology, and she's at a UNC. And she discovered in her research something that she named the broaden and build theory. Mm-hmm. And what that theory is, and I think this is a big piece of sort of the tools and these micro adjustments. What her research found was we need to be able to get out of a downward spiral of emotion to an upward spiral of emotion, because when we're in a downward spiral of emotion, usually something's at threat, right? So our amygdala is activated, and that is going to prevent us from problem solving, because we're not supposed to be solving problems when we're supposed to be running from the saber-toothed tiger. And so our goal is to, how do we get to a point where we actually can get to creative problem solving? And what we need to do to get there is to get to neutral to positive, as opposed to drowning in negative emotion. And one of the examples I give is, like, we've all been in a meeting where there's all sorts of creative ideas bouncing around and people get more excited and more ideas come out. And many of us have been in meetings where people are focused on the problem, how much that problem sucks, mm-hmm. perhaps who's at fault, who did what when to whom. Mm-hmm. And nothing gets solved, nothing moves forward. So part of my whole idea around micro adjustments is, how can we get to neutral and above, right? Because that's from that place, that's where we're going to move forward.
Yeah. Yeah. It reminds me of, and maybe she's the one behind this, the above the line, below the line. Is she behind that kind of?
That's not her work. And okay. I know above the line, below the line. Yeah. And to your point, most of us spend most of our time below the line, which is in threat.
That's right.
Again, because we're biologically wired for that, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's that whole idea that, you know, we're still wired, you know, it's the old hard wiring for the saber-toothed tiger, but now it's the snarky email.
Right. Exactly. Yes. And we have the same threat response, right? Yes. Excellent. Okay. So we are reaching another ad break. And when we come back, I want us to take some examples of what it would look like for people to actually apply micro adjustments in the way that you talked about, going from neutral or less than neutral to positive, that creative energy that we all need to be in, right? So you're listening to The Hard Skills with me, Dr. Mira Branco, and our guest today, Julie Fisher. You can catch us Tuesdays, 5 p.m. Eastern time on LinkedIn, YouTube, Twitter, Twitch, through talkradio.nyc, and we will be right back in just a moment.
Misalignment within your sales team or with a client stalls deals and creates unnecessary friction for you and the client, resulting in up to 37% lower win rate. If you're in pre-sales, sales, sales management, or sales enablement, and you'd like to increase revenues, win rate, margins, client satisfaction, and stay competitive, this show is for you. Hi, I'm Art Fromm, host of the Making Seamless Sales Show. Please join me live Thursdays at 7 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
Have you ever wondered what truly lies beneath the calm? I'm Jacinta Yang. Join me every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on Talk Radio NYC as we explore healing, self-discovery, and the space where science meets spirits to help you find peace in a busy world. Take a deep breath and tune in to Beneath the Calm, where every conversation guides you back to the calm within.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to The Hard Skills with Julie Fisher. So Julie, I'm going to throw out one example, but you might have more of these. The sort of like typical client that I often see is a mid-level leader in a fast-paced, high-pressure role within an organization that is going through upheaval, rifts, restructuring. Right now, so many of my clients are going through that, right? And they are just completely underwater. So they are definitely below the line. They're not really neutral, right? What micro adjustments would you be thinking about for somebody like that?
Okay. The first I would say, because my belief is it all begins with us, right? So the first thing is, can I regulate my own nervous system? And Mira, in a lot of my work, what I see is people have never learned to do that, right? A lot of society tells us to disassociate from our bodies. And so we ignore a lot of the signs of when our nervous system is really, really dysregulated, and sort of to that broaden and built, like when we're feel, you know, we don't even realize like we're not breathing deeply. We're like up in our chest breathing and our shoulders are up here. And so the first thing is, you know, can you simply notice? There's this great app called Mind Jogger. And often I have my clients download that app, and you can set it to randomly throughout the day, ask yourself questions. And in the context of above the line, below the line, for a long time, I had, when I was very involved in that practice, I had a mind jogger that 6 times throughout the day asked me, where are you? It was just a moment, right? It was a moment for me to pause and check in. Mm-hmm. So I think the first micro adjustment is simply awareness. When we're in reactivity, we're not aware.
Yeah.
So we're talking about something that sounds so simple, and yet so many people don't do it. And they have a story. I can't do it. I can't take any time to do that. And when it becomes a practice, so the first thing I would say is download Mind Jogger. Just so you have a source to check in with yourself. Give yourself 30 seconds, 4 to 6 times a day, where you can just notice what's happening in your body and what's happening in your head.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would say that a lot of the ways that we escalate problems is when we're not checking in with ourselves first. And noticing when our heart is racing and we're getting angrier and we're telling ourselves all kinds of things about what's happening in the moment and we're making assumptions without checking in, and all of those things increase conflict.
Right. And then once I'm settled, and if I know I'm below the line and I feel very threatened, I think sometimes the next question is, what's that threat? What's that threat in this moment? Like, I think just those two things, just so, you know, what's that threat? Because sometimes, again, our physical response to threat, the snarky email. Okay, let's use that as an example. We are dysregulated from that snarky email. And yet, if I ask myself, what's that threat? Am I going to get fired? Probably not. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. Is someone accusing me of something? Can I get clear on what is that threat? Is it my ego? Right. Is my ego a threat right now? Or is this sort of an irrational response? You know, one that I'm wired to have, and yet it's not related to the reality of what's happening in this moment. So that's number one.
Yep.
That would be the first thing. I would also say to that person, how are you starting your day? I would say everyone has 5 to 15 minutes. For personal practices to start their day. Whether that's gratitude, intention setting, those are all micro things that set us up personally so that the person who shows up to that situation that it sounds like they don't have a lot of control over can show up more resourced. So is it meditation? Is it stretching for 15 minutes in the morning? Is it going for a run? Identifying your thing that helps regulate your nervous system in the mornings, I think is essential. Yeah.
Yes.
One
of the things that often comes up is the I don't have time. I don't have any time to do the things that I want to do. I feel like everybody steals my time. I feel like everybody, my meetings are packed every single day, back to back to back. I don't have any time to focus or strategize. What could be a micro adjustment in that situation?
Oh, so You just described someone who feels very at the effect of their circumstances.
Yes.
Yeah. How am I at the effect of my circumstances? So even that, just awareness. Can I get curious around, first of all, my story around time? How am I not, my question might be, how am I not making time for myself, my well-being, my mental health, my physical health, my spiritual health, right? So where am I in this? Another tool is, am I taking 100% responsibility, right? For my life, myself.
Mm.
So what's my 100%? How much of my agency am I giving away? You know, oftentimes when we're feeling at the effect of, we have had no conversations with other people.
Yes, yes.
Right? We've had no conversations with anybody else, but we're really in victim mode. Right? We're feeling very at the effect of the circumstances around us. And the reality, the micro adjustment here is you only have agency over you. So the micro adjustment is, what conversation have you had with your manager? What kind of boundaries have you put in place? When someone piles another thing on your desk, what's your response to that? Do you huff and puff and be passive aggressive? Or do you say, hey, listen, you know what? I see that this week I had this. So do you want me to put that one aside while I focus on this? So I think there's like some of those micro adjustments is, and what would it be like for me to take 100% responsibility?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think what's coming to mind here is, you know, when we talk about micro adjustments such as walking or breathing, right? Mm-hmm. People start thinking, oh, that's, you know, barely going to put a dent in my day, right? But when you go below the surface of that, right, of like, what does it actually take for you to restructure your day to allow yourself that time? What does it actually take for you to set a boundary and have a conversation about what you need, right? In fact, those are the hard skills. Like that requires you to practice things that maybe you've never tried before, that maybe you've never had practice doing before, that maybe make you feel very uncomfortable to say, no, this time is going to be my time, or I can't take that meeting because that will leave me with nothing left. Or, you know, those kinds of things are not always easy for people who have given, said yes, 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 all the time, right? It requires more than simply just carving out time on my calendar, right?
Yes. And you're speaking, Mira, to a relationship someone has with themselves.
Mm.
So I think you and I maybe have talked about this before, especially for women, not only women, but especially for, you know, we've been raised to be givers. We've been raised to be kind and nice and helpful. And saying no feels like, you know, we're going to be disowned. I think it places for many people a real sense, right? An old sense of, I will not be loved. I won't feel safe and secure. And so again, the no micro adjustment, like practicing a no, what's a low risk no? Okay. What I would say a low risk no is, you know, the PTA calling and saying, can you bring the cupcakes to the, not this week.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Plate is full. You know, so what are the low risk no's? Before you go and say to your boss, absolutely not, I cannot do that. It's exercising a muscle, though. And if you're not familiar with that muscle, and I think you're bringing up something really important, Mira. Often I suggest the first thing is saying yes to yourself. You don't have to say no to anybody else. Mm. Can you start saying yes to yourself in the morning? So when I say, go take a walk around the block or go to a yoga class or whatever, you are giving yourself the gift of dopamine, of endorphins, and that's real. That's setting your day up because you have just released good, happy hormones into your body.
Awesome. Right. We're reaching another ad break. So you're listening to The Hard Skills with me, Dr. Mira Branku, and our guest today, Julie Fisher. And we will be right back in just a moment.
On Frank About Health, we're not just talking healthcare. We're managing disruption and innovation. Over the last 4 years, I've taken you from epilepsy and COVID to mental health, caregiving, and now the front lines of healthcare transformation. Stay tuned for a healthier future as we bring on the innovators, professionals, storytellers, and advocates who show you how to own your healthcare every Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a purpose-driven individual looking for deeper healing, clarity, and growth? Welcome to the Expansion Room, a transformative space for purpose-driven individuals. I'm Siobhan Lurice, host, licensed therapist, and coach. Join me every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to The Hard Skills with Julie Fisher today. We've had quite a number of comments come through. This seemed to really resonate with a lot of people. On Facebook, Lionel Clark said yes to what Julie and I were talking about. Then there was a number of emojis with hearts and stuff like that. And another person, Tariq 87 said, we've all been raised in that manner, right? So this really resonated mm-hmm. for folks about like how hard it is to overcome the messages of, you know, that we get over a lifetime and recognizing how important it is to first say yes to yourself.
One thing a day. There's your micro adjustment. One thing a day, say yes to yourself.
Yeah. So one of the things that I was thinking about is like, you were talking about building a muscle. One of the things that I realized very recently about myself is I have always considered myself a very resilient person. Mm-hmm. But I realized recently when I've had quite a number of issues physically with injuries and things like that, that I am resilient in only one area of my life, which is the emotional and mental health resilience. I'm unflappable, very few things bother me. But then when the physical stuff started happening, I was not used to it. I never had to deal with it like other people, right? In my family. And so I've got my spouse who's always dealt with a chronic, illness. And he is very used to it. He knows exactly what to do, all the things. He's done all the micro adjustments in order to be like, he's got all the muscles there, right? I have none of the muscles when it comes to the physical resiliency. And so just because you're resilient in one area of your life does not mean you automatically are able to transfer the skills in another area. So I'd love to hear like your thoughts about the resiliency building when it comes to how you think about yourself, resilient versus not, what we tolerate versus what we don't, what sustains you versus not, those kinds of things.
It's so interesting. I think part of Yes. First of all, I want to just affirm you. Yes. We build, because resiliency is about building muscles, and most of us build them in certain areas of our life that have been tested, right? Yeah. Or we're trained to, right? Yeah. I mean, and so, you know, like you, lots of the men, that doesn't really flap me. Lots of people share things that other people might fall off their chair, and I can stay and hold space, and that all feels, I have a very fear around physical, you know, physical interruptions in my life. And it is a muscle. So you've never faced that before. The truth about resiliency is we build the muscle by being challenged. We build the muscle by butting up against that growth edge. And I also think we build the muscle, Mira. We live in this either or world, and very few things are solved that way. I think we also build that muscle by being able to hold complexity. Mm-hmm. The both and.
Yeah.
Right? And there's challenges here and there's opportunities here, right? So for you, this feels challenging. And there's an opportunity to build a muscle here that you didn't that you didn't have before. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's the first thing I would say about resiliency, right? And this whole idea that, so can I hold the complexity that two things can be true at the same time? The other thing that I'm often asking myself when I'm faced with challenges is, how is this for me?
Mm-hmm.
So how can this be for me? Right? So maybe the way it is for me is I'm building, I do have a hamstring issue. I am working on building that muscle, like the literal muscle. And so when that gets built, I will be in a better place. I will be stronger to face the next pickleball incident.
Yeah. And I'm curious, you know, if we're going to continue with this analogy for just a little bit longer, resilience, sometimes people think about it as coping and accepting or tolerating suffering. And I'm not sure that is the message, right? Resilience is more about what helps, what sustains, what keeps you going, what feeds you, right? And so how do you think about like resilience that is like an unhealthy message in our world today around resilience versus,
yeah. I think we have a muscle through mentality. You know, I think there's still this, you know, kind of outdated, toxic, I'm going to say sort of toxic masculine muscle through mentality that's pushed in the world and in the workplace, right? Mm-hmm. And resilience isn't about that. Right. Resilience is about strengthening muscles that help us move forward, not get dragged forward. Like when I think about the muscling through, I think someone like dragging someone over the finish line. It's not about that. It's about, can I strengthen muscles that are going to help me face this challenge differently in the future? Or another challenge, am I strengthening a muscle that I'm going to be able to apply to something else? Let's go back to boundaries. If you start strengthening that muscle, because I think learning to say yes to yourself and no to others is part of resiliency.
Yeah.
And if you start strengthening that muscle and you start with that little small yes, and then it turns into a little no, eventually that's going to be a confident, okay, I see you're putting this on my desk. And you know what? This also, you also gave me this, this, and this this week. So which one of these am I deprioritizing?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, absolutely. Lionel Clark said on Facebook, it's also a hard mental challenge to build muscle growth. Yes.
It is.
Totally.
It is.
Okay. It is. So if somebody's listening right now and thinking, I know I'm barely holding it together. I don't have time to fix it. This sounds like a lot. This sounds like I'm going to be working on something forever. What would you say to them?
Download Mind Jogger and build awareness around your nervous system.
Very
just
good.
Check it. Just check yeah. in with yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. It goes back to there's a reason we started talking about micro adjustments. And that is you've got to chunk it down to bite-sized pieces. And there's only one way to that, you know, end state muscle growth. And that is with everyday tiny adjustments that will get you there. Right.
You don't go to the gym and start with a 50-pound weight.
That's right. That's right. Okay. So if people want to find out about you, where can they find more information? I'm also showing it live here.
They can find me at juliefisher.com, juliefishercoaching.com. They can find me at 9 to Thrive, the well-being podcast on Apple, on Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can find me on LinkedIn, on Instagram. You can sign up for my newsletter. If you're interested in looking at your Wheel of Life, come to my website and you can sign up and get your Wheel of Life and follow me. Check me out. Send me an email. I'd love to be in dialogue with you.
Awesome. Her podcast, 9 to Thrive, is awesome. You definitely should go listen to it. I love what Julie, you know, shares there as well as on her website and everywhere else. Audience, what did you take away? And more importantly, what is one small change you can implement this week based on what you learned from Julie? I suspect it's going to be some kind of micro adjustment. Share it with us, whatever that is, on LinkedIn so that we can cheer you on. The Hard Skills is also on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Twitch, Apple, Spotify, Amazon, all over the place, wherever you find your podcasts. If today's episode resonated with you, share it with a colleague or leave a review. And thank you to talkradio.nyc for hosting. Together, we will navigate the complexities of leadership and emerge stronger on the other side. That's right. The hard skills muscle. That's right. So thank you for joining me and Julie Fisher today on this journey. This is Dr. Mara Branca signing off. And until next time, stay steady, stay present, and keep building those hard skills muscles. Bye, everybody.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.